Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 469, March Gamer Madness Part 2, Top Popular Themes. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hello, friends. We are back and we are mad with excitement to wrap up the March Gamer Madness, but of course, the much better version of March Madness. It's tabletop, Anthony.
Tabletop gaming madness. We're here, and it is March, except now it's April, but that's okay. The other guys do that too, so it's fine.
It's just there for the branding, folks. It's not literal. It's not, you know, it's still somewhat thematic, but, you know.
Yeah. Legally distinct, not literal. We're having lots of fun here. No, but seriously, we're going to do rounds 2 through 6. So we're going to whittle down the remaining 32 games until we have one single game representing one single theme that is the best of the best out of our cats versus zombies versus aliens versus robots versus samurai versus knights versus Vikings versus cowboys.
Yes, which is in the end, there can be only one.
There will be only one, and I honestly have no idea what it is. Sometimes we do these, and I'm like, I know what's going to win. I know what's going to win when I make the bracket. This time, I'm like, I have no idea, actually.
So this
is going to be like that year that photosynthesis won for components, where I'm like, cool, I guess that wins. I don't know.
That's a thing now.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to our past episodes, I know we have an extensive catalog, 10-plus years of gaming, over 400, close to 500 episodes, but these are very timeless kind of episodes because every March Gamer Madness is a different theme. We try very hard, and I don't know if you all notice this, but we try very hard to have different episodes with different themes, different topics, so that if you do go back to previous episodes, you do get something that's unique. So this is the first time we've ever done this topic, but again, there's been many other March Gamer Madnesses that's very, very fun. So definitely check those out because they're a good time and we kind of blow through it. And, you know, it's random, but it's fun and we fight about it. And then we get to the best and all of those final decisions are binding. And, you know, in this case, whatever popular theme wins, that's how all games have to be made going forward. Right? That's what you told me, Anthony.
Yeah. No, if it's cats, then every game must have cats for the rest of time. Forever.
Everything's going to be a cat version of a thing.
Yeah. Let's make Chris lose his mind.
Just like you have space bees, it'll be space cats. The next TI4 is going to be cat themed.
I mean, the cover of TI4 is a cat, so I think we're already there.
They're already halfway there, folks. All the aliens, everything's cats. We are cats. All right, so before we get into that, we just want to do some really big shout-outs because there's a lot of things going on, not just with Board Gamers Anonymous, but also Anthony, Board Game Academics.
Yeah, Board Game Academics is chugging along. We're in the midst of our call for proposals for the 2024-25 conference and journal. So what that means is right now we are accepting proposals with abstracts of up to 250 words for papers and or presentations. Our conference is coming up in July, and the journal, of course, will be early next year. But if you have something, if you're interested in this, if you know somebody who'd be interested in this, please, please, please share it. We'll be accepting those until April 15th. We've extended it slightly just because it was closing a little bit too close to the holiday. Didn't want anybody to get stuck over the holiday weekend, not able to submit. But April 15th is definitely the hard deadline because we're going to be trying to review everything and get back to people by May 1st with acceptances. So check that out. It is up on boardgameacademics.com/submissions. And all the details you need there in terms of what to submit and how and when, they're all available for you.
Absolutely. So definitely check that out. And we will have more media information going out. And Anthony, maybe you'll let people know. I just dropped it in the chat for you. We also have a brand new, amazing board game cover that goes along with our Board Game Academics for our issue one.
Yeah, yeah. So Katya Howitson of Board Game Art Creations was so kind to contribute a piece of art. So if you haven't seen these are these beautiful pieces of art that Katya makes that take different board game components and make different images out of them. So you've probably seen these on Board Game Geek. They run a Kickstarter. I have one coming up very soon. And so they've contributed a piece of art for the cover of issue one. So you can see that on the website, boardgameacademics.com/issue1. It's wonderful. So we feel very privileged to be able to use Katya's artwork. And I hope you enjoy. We hope you enjoy. And definitely check out their upcoming Kickstarter.
Yeah, they'll have a calendar coming up. And again, take a look at the journal, because that cover, when you zoom in, you're going to be amazed at her work. And it's a work of art on many levels. All right. And Anthony, we also have something pretty quick to mention as well. This weekend, we're going to be at a place doing things.
Yeah, yeah, we're doing stuff. It's going to be great. Now, if you caught us last year, or if you just listened to us talk about it here on the podcast, we're at Long Island's largest tabletop gaming event, the Long Island Tabletop Gaming Expo. It's at the Cradle of Aviation in Garden City, New York, April 6th and 7th, which is this Saturday and Sunday. We are presenting on both of those days. So we're going to be talking about leveling up your tabletop teach. We're going to be talking about leveling up mental health through games. It's going to be awesome. I'll be there. Chris, you'll be there. Will's going to join us. Several other special guests will be joining us as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're in the area, if you live in Long Island or adjacent and can make it, definitely do that. If you do not and cannot, stay tuned. I'm sure these presentations or pieces of them will become available in different forms in the future. But it'll be a lot of fun, and we look forward to seeing everybody there who will make it.
Excellent. So check us out. The videos at some point will be up on Board Game Academics. But if you're in the area, please do come. Please do join us for the two presentations. Absolutely, positively check out their website, because there's so many special guests, events, activities, and programs that I'm sure if you're anywhere near the area whatsoever, you'll definitely want to be there. All right, Anthony, that's everything that's happening with us. Let's get on to our feature review. So our feature review this week, of course, is the wrap-up of all wrap-ups. It's the madness of all madness. It is the top popular themes that are in our March Gamer Madness.
Yeah, these are non-IP themes. So we're looking at games that are not explicitly an IP. So it's not like Star Wars is a theme. It's space, or in this case, robots or aliens. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, would recommend going back to listen to that first. We go through all 32 matchups of the initial 64 games. This week, because we've already gone through that, we're not going to give like our full spiel on every game. That was last week. But, you know, we're definitely going to make our case for each of these and why we think they should be there. And for round two, we have the tiebreaker from the contest, the WooBox, the contest that we ran on Facebook and on the website. So if we can't agree, if it's a tie, we will defer to the listeners which one they thought was best.
Absolutely. All right, Anthony, let's get us started.
All right. So in this first chunk, brackets, region, whatever we want to call it, we have cats versus zombies. But specifically, this first matchup, the zombies lost both of the previous ones. So it's Isle of Cats as the number one seed versus the number nine seed, Boop.
Boop. Excellent.
Boop. Boop.
That's the one. I mean,
in this case, it's just Boop, but it could also be Boop.
That's true. It could be both versions. There's depending on how many O's you want there.
Yeah, yeah. You want two O's? You want five O's? You want what do you want?
How many O's do I have to pay for?
That's yeah, yeah. The Wheel of Fortune style. Give me an O. So I personally, we went through this last week. I love Isle of Cats. You notoriously do not. For me, that's it feels like more of a cat game. You're actually going out. You're getting the cats. There's cards that represent their behavior. You're bringing them back. You're laying them out on the deck of your boat. You have these great cat polyominoes you have to blend together. Boop is an abstract, a cute abstract, but an abstract at the end of the day. So I'm going to go with Isle of Cats.
But Boop has really cool components, and it does thematically do what cats do, which is they boop each other, Anthony. I think you're true. Overlooking the thematic appeal of the thematic nature of cats, which is booping. So you boop one cat, the cat jumps up and goes to a different location. Your cats are fine, but they are two-dimensional, and they are weird shapes for some reason.
Yeah, so that's true. Both games have weird-shaped cats. That's true.
They really do. They really, yeah, really, yeah, do.
Mm-hmm. So are you voting for Boop?
I'm voting for Boop, man. Come on. It's not even all a question. The people out there know. They know. They're all booping right now. Everyone's booping along to this podcast. They're listening to it, and they're like, yeah, man, Boop.
I can't argue with that. I mean, the listeners can, though, apparently, because they voted 75% for the Isle of Cats. So.
Damn it! We were so close! We almost booped it!
Yeah.
All right. Well, Isle of Cats moves on to the next round.
All right. All right, next up, we do have some cats versus some zombies. We got Cat in the Box Deluxe Edition at number 5 versus number 4, Zombicide Black Plague.
And technically, the cat in the box could also be undead because it's both dead and alive at the same time, which is also what zombies are. So I think this is the most critical matchup of the competition, Anthony. We really got to get down to the deep here because I don't think we were expecting this. And it's here, and we got to pay attention, man. What are you thinking?
I mean, I think zombies win either way, based on your argument that you're saying. So,
everything's zombies.
Yeah. Zombies everywhere. I don't know. Cat in the Box is a fantastic game. I love it, and it's cute, and it's just a really cool take on trick-taking. And the cat is really important to it because that is the theme. Some people are like, wait, what are we doing here? Like, Schrodinger's cat. And they're like, oh, okay.
Because cards could be anything. They could be this or that, which again, when you play it, you're like, wow, this is actually very smart. I don't know why anyone thought about this before.
Yeah. So that's really cool. I dig that. And honestly, a lot of work went into this from like Bezier taking the original version, which had that, and then kind of upgrading it for Deluxe Edition. Black Plague is like the best version of Zombicide, and Zombicide is like the zombie game.
Sure.
So it's hard not to vote for that, but I really like Cat in the Box. So
does Zombicide have cats?
Probably. Now, I don't know.
Isn't historically, thematically true that the Black Plague was caused by a lack of cats? Because of the fear of cats? Because of
the rats, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, it wasn't the rats, it was the fleas, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we have cats thematically playing in both games. I like this.
Yeah. Oh, there are character packs though for Thundercats that are compatible with
Zombies. Oh no. So, nostalgia bait. No.
I do have a Lion-O downstairs. I forgot I got that.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Is it zombified or is it an actual
No. You get Mumra zombified.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Which he already is zombified. He's a mummy.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the two pack. It's got like big ridiculous Mumra, like the abomination version, and then you got him, like, you know, and it's like shrivel little hood.
All right. I guess that allows for some sort of weird tiebreaker because there's cats and Zombicide Plague. So I'm gonna go with Zombicide Black Plague.
All right.
Yeah.
So we gotta go to the listeners again on this one.
Here we go.
The listeners tell boop, us we
boop,
got
boop, 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 yeah. boop, boop.
Somehow boop, boop won boop. This matchup that it's not in.
Well, again, because it's unexpected, because, again, Cat in the Box, so, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
It booped its way into here.
Yeah. The actual winner, though, is Zombicide Black Plague.
All right. All right. So Zombicide Black Plague moves on to the next round.
You know, the listeners right there were like, seriously, boo? Are they actually going to do that?
It could, right? Because, yeah, you know, thematically, that's cats. They're unpredictable and they're getting everywhere. And
yeah, yeah. It's our show. We'll do whatever we want. It's fine.
Could happen. Yeah. Good. Yeah, so, you know, computers have problems, right?
There's things. Yeah, numbers get mixed up. But yeah, who knows what we're doing over here?
Sure.
All right. Number six is Dawn of the Zeds, which is the Victory Point solo, pretty much solo only, zombie game, which people who play solo games are in love with. Versus number three, Calico, which is an abstract tile-laying game in which cats come and lie down on your quilt. It's got cats in little funky poses on mm-hmm. little tiles, and you place mm-hmm. them out. I don't know that cats are a big part of the theme beyond that, unless you play the digital version.
Yeah.
Which I know you said has a crazy, ridiculous solo campaign.
It's a thing.
Yeah. So, I honestly, Dawn of the Zeds looks amazing, but I've just not gotten into that experience. If I'm going to play a big, long solo campaign, it's not going to be with zombies. So I'm going to go with Calico in this case.
But to be fair, zombies could play for longer. That's
true.
Yeah. It's long experience. Zombies are the perfect people to play with because they
that's
can
true.
Just,
they are
yeah.
basically immortal until
uh-huh.
they rot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I'm going to go with Calico too because I think it's a far scarier proposition if there's a cat cult that's running everything. So
that's yeah. true.
I'll handle the zombies. The cat cult, I think, is already in full effect. So
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Calico then.
Calico right. moves on to the next round.
All right, number seven is Cat Lady. Who is the best cat lady? You got more cats? Did you feed them? You're the best cat lady. Versus Dead of Winter, a Crossroads game, which is definitely about zombies, but it's also about just being a jerk to your friends. So yeah. it's got a lot going for it. I mean, you got like kind of a tongue-in-cheek card game, which is cute and fun, but also kind of sad at the same time in weird ways.
Aww.
Versus Dead of Winter, which is like this epic social experience that if it hits with your group, it's amazing and very memorable. It's hard. I don't think of Dead of Winter as a zombie game. Obviously, it's about zombies. It's about the zombie sure. apocalypse. But that's not the stuff I remember from it. I remember like yeah. hoarding fuel and hiding it from people so that I could win my secret objective.
Dude, you're a jerk.
Yeah, that's the point. The game, it makes you a jerk. But Cat Lady, I'm not a... It's fun, but it's... I don't know. It's a weird way to look at cats. It's very stereotypical. I'm going to go Dead of Winter.
Yeah, I think there is a post-apocalyptic future where cat lays are ruling the earth. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. You know, that they would actually be able to do that. But again, yeah, Dead of Winter is a zombie game, obviously, first and foremost, but it's more than that. So I think the Crossroads right. systems is great.
All right. We agree then.
Yeah. So, I guess not even that. Dead of Winter, a Crossroads game, moves on to the next round.
All right.
Yeah. Not Boop. So Boop's not moving on. That's,
no
that's
Boop.
What you were saying.
No. In fact, we picked the top four games from this top thing. So sometimes we have crazy upsets. Not this time. It's the top four.
Who All knew? Right. Who knew?
I didn't know. Who know? Now we know. Next up, we have Aliens versus Robots. So space stuff, sci-fi stuff. Number one in this group is Nemesis, the game that is alien, but not alien, but also alien. Versus number nine, Twilight Imperium 4, which got a special dispensation because it has so many different alien races
sure.
that are unique in their own way. It's not explicitly an alien game, but it's an important part of that experience. Nemesis, I know we pushed this forward last time over Mechanica and it was close.
Sure.
But it is basically that alien experience, right? Like, running through a hallway, trying to stay alive,
mm-hmm.
like Space Hulk, but with more players kind
yes.
of situation.
100%.
Twilight Imperium 4 is just like a big, epic, massive space opera that happens to have a lot of alien races in it, which is cool, but that's not the point of the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 4X game as far as
right.
I mean, there are alien races in there, but when you actually play the game, I'm trying to remember if there's ever, I don't think there's anything on the tabletop in play that shows your race. Am I wrong about that? I'm trying to remember. I mean, the box, of course. I mean, the alien factions are
nothing aliens on the map. Yeah, just on your faction sheet.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's something, but, and I mean, there is some thematic gameplay as well as, you know, special abilities and such, but primarily it is a straightforward 4X game. Obviously one of the best, certainly, but not necessarily what you think when you think aliens.
Not me. No. Yeah. It's not how I just define it. For me, I'm going to go with Nemesis, even though it's not like my cup of tea as a game, like as an alien experience, it's definitely iconic in that way.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Nemesis as well. So Nemesis moves on to the next round.
All right. Next up, number 5, Legendary Encounters Alien. So the actual game about Alien.
Yes.
Versus number 4, Baseball Highlights 2045. And so just a reminder on this one, it's in here because several of the players that you can use to build out your baseball team are robots. Because
it's the future.
It's the future.
Almost.
Not that far in the future anymore.
This game
came out. This game came out 10 years ago, and now it's, you know, we're 10 years closer to 2045.
It's going to be like those hoverboards. Where's my robots playing baseball? I was promised robots playing baseball. There is no robots playing baseball. Yeah.
This guy's not even on steroids. What are we doing?
He's not playing fairly.
I love Legendary Encounters. I think it's a great experience. And it's tough because we said no IP games, but this doesn't even feel like it thematically, it feels like you're playing through the Alien movies.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has that tension and stress and cooperative nature of trying to survive, which I think is what really works here.
Yeah, it's quintessential Alien. And the Baseball Highlights is nice that it has robots. It's a nice little twist on it. But thematically, it doesn't really impact it so much. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Legendary Encounters. Alien moves on to the next round.
Alrighty. Next up, we have number 11. On Mars Alien Invasion, which I think the only expansion on our list because it's basically a whole game.
Yeah, it is.
With four different modules that each give you like 4 hours of gameplay for On Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cosmic Encounter, which is just a bunch of aliens in a box, right? You pick an alien, it's got a special thing, and there's like 100 of them. You get all these expansions. It's like you take that one part of Twilight Imperium and you make that the whole game. And then there's not really any game to go there. Just random stuff happens. And you see who wins. It's a fun experience for sure. So we've got big, heavy Euro and borderline. I'm not going to say party game, but it's pretty light and pretty accessible. Cosmic Encounter. What do you think, man? We got two very different takes on aliens.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say that the On Mars, the Alien Invasion, it certainly thematically plays out in a somewhat quasi, hopefully we don't ever know. Let's hopefully not an alien invasion, but it plays thematically out, right? I think it elevates On Mars to being a game that's really exceptional, where I think On Mars is just a good game. It's just like, it's fine. It's fine. Right. It's a good. It's kind of dry. It really needed this. And again, I was surprised from Vita Lacerda and Ian O'Toole that they actually did this. And it looks, because it's different and dynamic. Cosmic Encounter is, I don't know if there's another game that really embodies all the different alien-like possibilities that are out there. The artwork is wonderful. There is endless numbers of aliens. I mean, how many expansions has this had and just
so many
revisions and everything else? I play a lot of times. I'm going to go with Cosmic Encounter, even though it's not a better game than On Mars Alien Invasion. I just think when I get that choice or I get handed an alien, I really absolutely positively must play into whatever that alien special ability is thematically. And the artwork is evocative of that special ability. It's not just like, and he has a tentacle or an antenna or something like that. Like, they really do play into that. So I'm going to go Cosmic Encounter.
Oof. I'm going to go with On Mars, just because, like you said, it does elevate that game in such an interesting way. And it makes it, you know, like, it goes from hard sci-fi to this kind of speculative approach, almost like fantasy sci-fi, and I really enjoy that.
All right, so, that leaves up to our listeners, Anthony.
It does. Let's pull it up, and okay. It's a tie.
Whoa!
People votes. Yeah, 50-50. So it actually goes to our magical die.
We haven't broken that out in a long time.
I know. The listeners usually break the ties for us. So
a tie? Oh, man.
Double tie. So how this works is I have a D20. I have a handful of D20s on my desk, and I'm going to roll it. Odds on the D20, we're going to go with On Mars Alien Invasion. Evens, we're going to go Cosmic Encounter.
And if it lands weirdly, that doesn't show a number, then boop?
Then boop.
Yes! 100%. Yeah, we're doing baby. It. Boop is back in!
So we need a cocked die here to get boop in.
There you go. Love it.
It is a one. Critical fail.
Oh, my God.
But On Mars Alien Invasion moves on, because that is an odd number, even though it is also a critical fail. That does not bode well.
So thematically, it plays out both ways, as far as I'm concerned.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. All right. On Mars.
Alien Invasion, next up, of course. Yeah.
Alien Invasion, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
By itself, On Mars has no aliens in it. What would we be doing here?
Not that we know of, Anthony. Not that we know. That's true. They were there. They were hiding in the background.
That's true. Right on that rock.
It's a very Where's Waldo kind of thing. They were somewhere there. It's like when you watch the Dune 2 in the movie theater, unless you have the super IMAX laser vision version of it, you can't, you know, see the aliens, but they're there.
Right.
Although
you got to be able to see all the grains of sand because they're on the grains of
that's
sand.
That's right. somewhere. They're somewhere in the background.
Somewhere there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have number 10, Burn Cycle, which is a relatively recent release from Chip Theory Games about running a team of robots in the near future to take down evil corporations. Love it. Great theme.
Wow. That's so unlike what's happening now. It's way in the future and dystopian. It's definitely not a thing that's happening. Okay. Feel better now.
Yeah. Well, we don't have the robots yet. That's why it's in the future.
Do we? I don't know.
I wish we had the robots. Take down the corporations. That'd be great. Number two is Robo Rally, programming game. You're programming your robots. They're running through these various courses, mazes, objectives, etc. So we got a bunch of robots here. So really, you've got the very complex, heavy chip theory approach to robots, with the like puzzly exploration elements, action point, dice rolling, cooperative. You know, they throw 400 mechanics into their games. Versus Robo Rally, which is just almost a pure programming experience. Classic versus new, $30 versus $300. Which one do we think is the better experience here for our robots?
Well, I think when we do have our future robot masters, I certainly would like them to be taking down the powerful corporations. And I mean, they both have that kind of thematic play as far as like you do have to play them as robots, as far as like what their capabilities might be. I mean, Robo Rally is a lot more straight line because you're doing the programming, but beyond the programming, I don't really feel much to it. Burn Cycle has much more, how would you say it, like long-term kind of experiences other than just that action moving kind of thing. Like there's a lot of other things they do in the game. So I'm going to go with Burn Cycle.
Yeah, me too. I think they're both really cool approaches to robots. I really, really like this one for a lot of reasons. Like it's got that Android Netrunner vibe to it, but and like along with the colorfulness, it's like orange. It's not like dark, gritty sci-fi colors. It's cool.
All right. So that means Burnt Cycle moves on to the next round.
All right. Next up, we have the matchup of samurai games versus Western European medieval knight games. Number one from the first time around is Samurai. A Reiner Knizia classic abstract game versus number 8, Lancaster, however you want to say that. what do we think about the abstract versus the slightly less abstract?
yeah, They're both beautiful. They both have pieces and art representing the different dynamics and different ages and continents and social class structure systems and how they're trying to move against each other. Lancaster, I think, is... I think it's a little more thematic. I think samurai is a little more abstract. And building that castle, which is, again, a very minor kind of part of the game, but flipping over those tiles to build the castle out does feel like a thing. And so I'm going to go with Lancaster.
I agree. Yeah, I like samurai a lot, but I do think about it as like a samurai game, as a, you know, East Asian, Japanese style game, but it's also at the same time I don't. In the same way, I don't really think of Kenichi's games as anything other than like a math puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Lancaster moves on to the next round.
All right, next up we have number 12, Shadows Over Camelot, the classic Days of Wonder game about the court of King Arthur and his knights.
I know that guy.
Versus number 13, Senjutsu, Battle for Japan, which is a relatively recent game. And this one is about, it's a 1-4 player game, relatively small in scope with just a handful of samurais, because it's a more, it's dueling rather than like armies on a map. Mm-hmm. So it's a deck based and you're kind of driving your little miniatures to fight each other. So a lot of combat, a lot of different kinds of approaches here, but and some deduction elements to it as well, with the hidden movement and hidden elements. Sure. Both games have a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, and obviously even the King Arthur one is somewhat limited in scale, but the production is next level. That was when Days of Wonder was Days of Wonder. And right, thematically playing out the betrayal that's occurring, so you're playing against the team, but at the same time, the gameplay is fairly simple because you're playing cards out to certain locations in order to defend or move or attack or something like that. But both play pretty well. Both play, you know, both have that kind of thematic experience of that time and age, and you are moving different elements across. It's hard. And again, geez, it is hard. It's just downright hard. What do you have, Anthony? What do you think?
Yeah, I think for me, Senjutsu is very good, and there's something about it that just feels a little, again, kind of abstracted. A lot of these are kind of abstracted, because, and part of that too is modern games are trying not to necessarily just like take and caricaturize other cultures, which is good. But at the same time, often they're still made by Western designers, so they end up being a little abstracty, a little kind of washed out in certain ways. Mm-hmm. So I think Shadows Over Camelot doesn't have that, because it does have that extra bit of Days of Wonder sheen on it. So I'm going to go with Shadows Over Camelot.
All right. I think you convinced me on that, too. I'm going to go with Days of Wonder, because I think it does a little bit more, not much more, but I think it does a little bit more depicting that age, at just with the level of production and the kind of epic nature of it. Yeah, I Shadows Over Camelot. It's still more or less, again, depending on your mileage, one of, if not the best Arthurian legend game, until something comes out and kind of replaces it. Still the top, as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so that means that King Arthur moves on to the next round. Ho ho!
Ooh, in search of the Holy Grail.
All right. The round table. Get your coconuts out, people.
Yeah, let's get a roll. Number 11, Ikusa, the 1986 classic, in which you are building and expanding your influence and leading armies to victory in feudal Japan. Just such a sprawling, massive game, especially for when it came out in the 80s. Versus number 3, Rising Sun, which is not from the 80s. This game's just 5 years old now, I believe, and it's kind of the sprawling, epic, map-based feudal Japan game from modern times, from Eric Lang.
It does feel very 80s, Rising Sun, to be fair.
It does, that's true, yeah.
It's like overly produced, overly colorful, tons of troops on the map. Yeah, I mean, this is funny that they got matched up like this, because very similar as far as type is concerned.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Like, and honestly, like, Akusa, it doesn't play like Risk at all, but it feels like Risk, right? Mm-hmm. It has, like, the area majority, that movement, the auction type of approach, that dice rolling, everything like that. It's not the same mechanics, but it has, you know, it's coming from that pedigree, right? If we're releasing a mass market war game, people know Risk. So it has that kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously been redone in different ways since then.
I think historically, if you were old enough or back in the day, you would know it as Shogun. Because I think that was right. The Milton Bradley original version until, I guess, legal stuff got involved.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's not the James Clavell novel, mm-hmm. whatever that nonsense was. The Rising Sun, on the other hand, is Eric Lang. And it feels like Eric Lang because it's gods and monsters on a map hitting each other asymmetrically, and everybody says it's broken in like 30 different ways, and it is, but all the brokenness balances out somehow. Yeah. And Eric Lang's like, who cares if it's broken? Have fun. And people are like, it is fun until someone stomps on me because it's broken. It has kind of that diplomacy, not diplomacy, but like the diplomatic element to it that his other games don't. I don't love Rising Sun nearly as much as other things, but I think in this case, I like it better for this category.
Mm.
Like, it's more accessible here and now. It's shorter.
Mm.
Akusa Shogun is a very long game. And it gives you a lot of flavor and feeling of the different elements while still being modern.
Yeah, I think certainly if Shogun, which was the original version, came out today, it would be Rising Sun, more or less. I think Rising Sun, the fact that you do have the faction connections, the fact that you do have the betrayals that go along with it, it's very thematic. So I think Rising Sun moves on to the next round.
All right. And then last matchup in this group, we have number 7, Yedo, which is a worker placement style game about building influence in Shogunate era Yedo, versus Sekigahara, which is a 2-player war game from GMT about the Battle of Sekigahara. Try to build up your forces and the kind of fight that happened right before the unification of Japan, mm-hmm. at the turn of the 17th century. Very, very good war game. One of the best, actually, that's been released in the last like 15, 20 years. Very representative of that time. Well-researched, very well implemented. A lot of different elements historically built in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yedo, on the other hand, is just significantly more accessible as a game. Like, it, Sekigahara is great, but it is for people who want to play long war games and only 2 of them. Whereas Yedo is a 2 to 3 hour game for up to 5 people. And it has those backstabby elements to it that you can play with. It has some very mean cards in there. But it also has a lot of kind of strategic elements that help you build it up. It's like Lords of Waterdeep level, but like with a couple layers of complexity added on top of it. So this is a hard one for me, as you can tell by the babbling. What do you think?
Yeah, it's apples and orange in some respects, and that's kind of hard. I love Yedo. I was probably one of, more or less, like the first group to pick this up. I think everybody went for Lords of Waterdeep, and I was like, Yedo, it's even better because you're warriors who go out on those missions, they come back. So Yedo was like collecting things to build up and being able to complete more and more missions. And it's great. It's long. They got the reprint. I haven't played the reprint. I still have the original edition. Sekigahara, I mean, it's just a whole nother level, and GMT just knows what they're doing on top of everything else. So, I mean, if we're thinking about thematics, I mean, Yedo's certainly a lot more accessible, but I think if we're thinking about thematics and we're thinking about what's the best representation, I think Sekigahara kind of squeaks that one out. For me, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's fair. I think I'm going to go with you. It is not as accessible. It's not as easy to get to the table. It requires 2 very dedicated people, but Sekigahara is... it's well made. It's very thematic, and it represents an interesting time in history.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. So Sekigahara moves on to the next round.
All right. Our last pairings here, we have Vikings versus Cowboys. And a lot of these are Vikings. So we knocked out a lot of Cowboy games in the first round already. Number one is just Vikings.
Sure. Just
the game Vikings versus number nine, Champions of Midgard. So Vikings is a more traditional, to a certain degree, abstracted Euro game. It's from Michael Kiesling, if that tells you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all these different workers that don't necessarily look like Vikings, except like their little meeple hats.
That's
they
right.
have little horns on their hats, therefore they are Vikings. And you're choosing them from this rondel, and you're then placing them along with the tile that they come with onto your own personal player board. And, you know, those different types of tiles represent like trading and pillaging and all sorts of cool stuff. It could be another theme, is what I'm trying to say. Like, it could be any seafaring civilization. Champions of Midgard is a dice-based worker placement game in which you are going out and fighting monsters. I feel like it has more elements of the theme baked into it. You are Vikings. You are still also going out and, you know, growing stuff and developing resources, but you're also collecting these different types of dice and these different weapons and building up your affinities and then being able to go out on a boat and kill something, which I don't know what it was like to be an actual Viking, but that's what I think of when you say Vikings, is pillaging and whatnot. So as much as I love Vikings, it's one of my favorite games. It's in my top 100. I think Champions of Midgard is a better Viking game.
It is. I think so. I mean, Vikings is a great game, but Champions of Midgard is the thematic. Again, it's more than just, they're more than just pillaging people, but it, there's pillaging in there. So
yeah.
Champions of Midgard moves on to the next round.
All right. Number five, we've got Blood Rage, which is Eric Lang's Viking game. So again, Eric Lang makes games with gods or hitting people and stuff. So it's that you've got some Vikings on the map, but you also got all the Norse gods who show up and wreak havoc. The drafting game, lots of opportunities for killing and losing and dying, and not always a bad thing depending on your strategy. Colt Express, on the other hand, is a programming game in which you are robbing a train, which is cool, and it works really well in that kind of Western setting. It's hard because does it speak to anything that I don't want to advance two different Eric Lang games? I don't know. I'm just like, both of them? I don't know. But I do think Blood Rage is more interesting.
Yeah, I think Blood Rage is more historically correct, where Cult Express is a lot of fun, programming and such, but the fact that their gods are represented well, the fact that there are factions in place, there are, again, special abilities related to the gods that do play well. The expansions work really well with it as well. It's just more on every account. So,
yeah.
Blood Rage moves on to the next round.
All right, Blood Rage.
Blood Rage. All right,
number six, Carson City. Worker placement with cowboys.
Cowboys!
Yeehaw. Versus number three, 878 Vikings, which, as we established last week, is not a phone number.
I keep trying it. Doesn't, yeah, no one picks, well, up.
Yeah, but it could actually be a phone number. It's 10 digits. Just saying. But it's that asymmetrical two-player war-style game from Academy Games set in Europe, based on like the Birth of America series. It's fantastic. It's super asymmetrical. It's very fun to play. It's one of the better two-player asymmetrical games out there.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't like 4 hours long.
Yes.
Because a lot of the other ones, or not based on like a specific theme like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think Carson City is great, but 878 Vikings is such a good representation of the theme historically and in gameplay that I have to vote for that.
A78 Vikings is very good. I've played it multiple times. I play with different player counts. It's got the expansions, which again are somewhat historically accurate, more or less timeline, you know, and you get to play out those fights. Carson City is brilliant. Carson City is so very good, but yeah. All right. I mean, it's thematic. It is of the time and age. It is the people and the professions that were active, but yeah, I think if it was anyone else other than 878 Vikings, I think Carson City would move on to the next round, but 878 Vikings moves on to the next round.
All right. We almost got another roll off there because it was a tie with the listeners too. All right, last one here in this round. We have number 7, A Feast for Odin. Uwe Rosenberg's epic worker placement, tile placement, polyomino, feeding Vikings, coins, Euro extravaganza versus 15, Pax Vikings, which is kind of a more historical approach to Vikings, and just kind of the, like, more from a political and societal structure rather than the we pillage stuff.
Instead of the weirdly shaped food, is that what you're trying to say?
No. The weirdly... Pax Vikings doesn't have weirdly shaped food.
No, that's
what has weirdly shaped
food. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm voting for, so what do you got?
I know you're voting for Pax Vikings, and so am I. Pax Vikings moves on to the next round. Woo!
Woo! Look what you tried to do. No, sir, no.
Damn it, I was so close.
Yeah.
My friend, you've
been
booped.
You're voting for Pax Vikings?
I'm voting for Pax Vikings. You've been booped.
Yeah, this is just out of spite, man. What are you doing?
No, it's a better game. I mean, let's be fair. It is a, look, it is a...
It is not a better game.
It is a historical strategy game, and it's trade and diplomacy, right? I mean, is that not true, my friend? Is that not true? The court. Does the court not think that's true? Come on.
The court does not think that's true. No.
Oh, you're a poopy head. Now, look, Carson City is a great game. It's just hands down a great game. It might be one of, if not the best worker placement games out there for a lot of reasons. But thematically, it's not as good as 878 Vikings. So you might like Feast of Odin better because it's Feast of Odin, right? It's that Uwe Rosenberg kind of stuff. But
this is true, yeah. But in the matchup with Carson City and 878 Vikings, 878 Vikings, both of those games are amazing. They're both highly rated,
yes,
top tier games that are in each of our top 100s. Pax Vikings is fine as a game.
How dare you? Fine?
It's fine.
All right, it's fine.
It's a Pax game. I mean, I'm sure it's more historically accurate and has more interesting things going on there because it is a Pax game.
Sure.
But as a game, it was like, this is fine. Okay. We're playing a game. It's fine. Feast for Odin's great. To me, I love it,
but it's less.
And I really want the final matchup to be a Feast for Odin versus Isle of Cats, so that you just storm off and I get to choose the winner.
Well, it was a good podcast while it lasted. It almost hit 500 episodes. It was eventually going to get there. So
yeah. All right. Well, I'm holding firm. Are you holding firm?
I'm holding firm.
All right. The listeners are tied again. I don't know how this happened three times.
You've been booped again, my friend. You've been booped.
I have been booped. I really thought this would be an easy one. I was like, I'll go with this and I'll win. So I'm going to roll the die, which, for the record, I could be anything. There's no way to know what I'm rolling.
It's true. Even I don't know.
13 odds. Feast for Odin moves on.
I've been booped.
You've been booped, yes. So we have all Vikings in the final chunk there. So.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is where we go into kind of lightning mode-ish. We just talked about all these games. We're not going to rehash everything we just said. But we have 4 games left from each section. We're trying to get that down to a winner from each, and then we'll have a final 4 facing off against each other. Number 1, Isle of Cats versus number 4, Zombicide, Black Plague.
I mean...
What you got?
I mean, if anyone could take out the Isle of Cats, it's going to be zombies, man. So,
yeah.
Zombicide! Yeah. Black Plague. It's the best version of Zombicide. And Isle of Cats has less zombies. I mean, they're cats, but much less zombies.
Yeah, I love Isle of Cats. I think it's a fantastic game. But the cat stuff, it's definitely got cats, but the cats are...
Abstracted.
They're abstracted to a degree. Like, almost all these cat games are abstracted to a degree. Zombicide is a zombie game through and through. You are facing hordes of zombies. They're physically on the map. So I'm going to go with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, Cat Lady is I think she's holding down the thematic appeal, like, of having cats,
right, so to
speak. And then Boop, again, because you boop people. And that's what cats do. They boop you. But, all right, yeah. Zombicide, Black Plague, moves on to the next round.
All right. Next up, number 3, Calico versus number 2, Dead of Winter, a Crossroads game.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Dead of Winter, a Crossroads game, because I think Calico, while it does have cats, the cats are a little bit less than, like, because I think you make a very good point that Dead of Winter, the zombies are there, but the game is not necessarily about the zombies. They're just a setting.
Right.
And Calico, the cats are there, but it's not necessarily about the cats. You're just making a quilt and the cats are just being cats and getting away. So Dead of Winter, the zombies are a little bit more of a thing. They're the impetus behind everything.
Yeah, I think I agree.
It's a better
game. They are kind of on the same boat, but it is a little bit more.
And it's a better game. It's just...
yeah.
The Crossroads system, I think, is just next level. I'm really sorry that they were never able to re-implement it well in any other system or any other game down the road.
They always try to do too much of it.
They do.
Like, just do the exact same thing with a different theme. It doesn't need to be, like, with dice or...
We were really excited. I mean, we were so excited about this because it seemed like this was going to be the thing. And then they released that weird sci-fi version, which we were, like, super excited. It had the gigantic book with it. And we're just like, and it was like $100-some-odd back in the day when games were not $100-some-odd.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just never sold. Like, and then there was other versions that, you know, so.
Yeah, I think the only one that's come out that people legit like that's actually worked was that pirate one. But that came out during COVID, like in June of 2020,
sure,
which was a terrible time. So, oh well, it sucks for them. Hopefully the next one's good. Freelancers, I think it's called. All right. Enough distractions. We've got the big one here, the big matchup. Number 1, Nemesis versus number 5, Legendary Encounters, Alien.
Go ahead.
Alien or do you want
Alien? Do you want
Alien? But we have Alien at home. We don't need this Alien. We have Alien at home.
That's excellent, man. I love that. But I want Alien. No, we have Alien at home. That's fine. Yeah.
I mean, I love Legendary Encounters, but Nemesis, it does Alien better than Alien.
Yeah. Alien. I mean, they literally sold $1,000 version of the game with its expansions and people bought it. And I was just like,
yeah,
you got it. You win. So Nemesis moves on to the next round.
It does. All right. Interesting matchup here. Number 11, On Mars, Alien Invasion versus number 10, Burn Cycle.
Aliens doing a thing, messing stuff up. Robots doing a thing to make things better. I get it. Yeah. Both heavy games.
I like me some socially oriented robots doing good for society. That's a cool thing.
It's really, in the end, only going to be the only thing that saves us, right, at this point?
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. Someone better, like, be programming some social justice, literal robot warriors.
I'm like, they're like, AI is going to take over everything. And I'm like, why not? I'm like, at this point, can't do a worse job than we are.
That is a good point. Yeah.
I'm going to go with Burn Cycle. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, it's more robots. If you're going to robot, then you're going to robot. So Burn Cycle.
I love me some robot, and that is definitely all the robot.
Yeah. Burn Cycle moves on to the next round.
All right. Okay. Here's a good one. 8 Lancaster versus 12 Shadows Over Camelot.
Ooh.
This is straight up your alley. I'll let you go first.
Well, Lancaster is more of the political stuff on a meta basis, the whole aisle and trying to work out those relationships and building up your stuff. And the knights are represented by weird wooden blocks, and I always hated that about the game. I mean, I get it, it's functional, but it's like, and this is slightly thicker wood, so it's stronger, and you're like, sure, I guess. It's like, and it's a Queen's game. Shadows of Camelot is just one of the best produced games, and it is not, obviously, it's more of a story, not historically accurate and such, but it does give you flavor and elements of it, and it's more of a personal drama as far as the partnerships and relationships go. So I'm going to go with Shadows of Camelot.
I agree. Yeah, I think it of the two, it's the one I've had the best experiences with, but it's also the one that felt most thematic based on what it was trying to do.
Yeah,
and maybe that's the English major in me being like, yay, Arthurian legend, but it's, well, I love it.
And again, this is a category about knights.
Yeah.
If it's a question about what is the better gameplay, then maybe Lancaster pulls that out, but it's a game about knights. And there's no better depiction of knights because they're on everything that you do when you play Shadows of Camelot.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Shadows of Camelot moves on to the next round.
All right. Next up, we have Rising Sun at number 3 versus Sekigahara at 15. So do you want pure historical facing off of these two factions over this 7-week war in 1601? Or do you want fantasy monsters punching each other?
Well, look, to be fair, Rising Sun is historically accurate from a Wikipedia point of view.
This, yeah, okay.
So you can't say it's, you know, they did do research.
Yeah. Oh, was, yeah, he researched hard.
It
he
was bad research.
It was terrible research.
It's literally
what I use.
Yes, good.
I use this game to show my students why not to use Wikipedia. Like, people can just add stuff and it's funny, and then you look like an idiot on the internet.
But it looks great, though. It looks great.
It does look great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that.
And that guy was amazing, whoever thought to do that. Just
yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, Sekigahara moves on to the next round.
Yeah. That's my choice.
All right. But again, Wikipedia, man. Wikipedia approves. Peer-reviewed. This is why our journal is actually peer-reviewed by academics and multiple people look it over and approve it and such instead of Wikipedia. But yeah. But
yeah.
Still no love Wikipedia. Wikipedia's amazing. Not saying a bad thing about Wikipedia. Just gotta be careful. That's
yeah.
All.
Yeah. Just, you know, don't get the English teacher in me started. Go off on Wikipedia.
Still good. Still an amazing resource. Still amazing.
The
resource.
Number of papers I've had to kick back and be like, Wikipedia is not a source. You can't use that as a source.
You can if it's a board game.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. You will make $3 million if you use it as a source for a board game. Yeah. The proof is right there, mm-hmm. Anecdotally. All right, we've got 4 Viking games here, so the Cowboys are already out.
Wow.
Sorry. Yeah, we're...
Cowboys versus Vikings has been solved, settled.
Yeah. Cats are out, and Cowboys are out at this point.
Aww.
Sorry, guys. I know cats are popular right now, but they're out. Champions of Midgard at number 9 versus number 5, Blood Rage.
Blood Rage.
I still love me some Blood Rage.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a defense for Champions of Midgard. It's a good game. It is
a good game, and it's more, you're actually playing as the Vikings a little bit more, whereas Blood Rage, you're like basically the gods, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember the theme.
You have tribes. You have legitimate tribes that you are playing out. And it's still a little more historical. Again, it's, you know, there's clans in both, and they're both fighting, you know, mythological monsters, so it's not the same. I guess if Champions of Midgard was a little more straight-line historical representative. And again, when I think Vikings, I do think Blood Rage.
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing that gets me a little bit is Blood Rage is more of a caricature of what Vikings were.
Yes. Right?
Because it's leaning into the mythology of it.
Yes.
Champions of Midgard, you have locations that are like the shipwright and the stave and the church. And like, it's, you are going through elements of being a human being in a civilization. And the civilization happens to be the Viking civilization. Mm-hmm. And then there's also some more fantastical elements, like there's sea monsters you have to go kill, right? So it's just a little more grounded. For me, I like that a little bit better. Blood Rage is fantastic. It's a better game. We're having that conversation again. But it's... I don't know. This one's tough. You want your fantasy Vikings, which is kind of what we've built up? Or do you want your, like, this is what the civilization was more or less like? Like, I don't know which one's more interesting.
I mean, they both have a lot of those fancy elements. Like I said, if Champion Midgard was not, but it is, it does have those, but it does have a couple more steps as far as like pulling resources in and such.
Yeah.
I'm
going to vote for Champions of Midgard. I talked myself into it.
All right. I'm going to go for Blood Rage then. You took me off the hook because, again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Then it comes down to the die. The die is making lots of decisions today. Odd numbers, Champions of Midgard. Evens is Blood Rage. And we got a 7. Champions of Midgard.
Champions of Midgard. Finds a way through the gods to move on to the next round.
All right. Next up, we have number 3, 878 Vikings versus number 13, A Feast for Odin.
It's not even close, man. It's not even close. I'm just not going to even say anything. I'm just, we're just going to move on, right? Because.
Yeah. I agree. This is the part, if you've never listened to one of these before, this happens every year where, like, one of the games I really like gets pushed through a little too far. And then at a certain point, Chris is just like, no, come on. Just come on. And I give it. This is usually that point. So, yeah, 878 Vikings is definitely a better Viking game.
Yeah, take your weirdly shaped food and items and go elsewhere.
You don't know what the food was shaped like back then. Dude,
they weren't shaped like polyominoes. Everything was a poly.
Maybe they were. I don't know.
All right. 878 Vikings moves on to the next round. And honestly, to be fair, it deserves to do so.
Yeah. All righty. We are going back to the top, and we are picking the winner from each of these four sections, and then we will get to a final winner. Number 4, Zombicide Black Plague versus number 2, Dead of Winter, A Crossroads Game.
What an upset that there are no cats here.
I know.
Because I think going into this competition, I was like, I'm going to have to deal with cats for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't hate cats. I'm just allergic to them. So there's a concern there. It's a medical concern, people. Try to understand. Mm-hmm. But, and again, like, zombies are all right, but never been my thing. So it was two combatants that I did not care about the victim. I didn't care who won. Honestly, I was like, no matter who wins, we both lose. So Zombicide Black Plague is the best version of Zombicide, which is good. And it does have tons of zombies and weird, odd characters here and there. Dead of Winter, A Crossroad Game, is probably what look, this is the way I look it out of here, Anthony, and tell me if I'm wrong. Zombicide Black Plague is the better zombie game. Yeah. Dead of Winter, A Crossroads Game is the better game.
Yes.
That's so.
I agree with both of those statements. And I think for the most part, with a few exceptions, we've gone with the better thematic game.
Because it's about, we're talking about popular themes here. So.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Dead of Winter, better game. But I think Zombicide Black Plague is going to win this division, Anthony.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I can't argue with that. If we're talking zombie games, that is the better one.
And again, we're not big Zombicide fans. Like, do you own it? You own some Zombicide, right? You own this.
This is the one I have. Yeah. And I have a lot of it because I went out and got a lot of like the stretch goals for like the Monty Python characters and all the fantasy stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, this is the one I have. And I like it. I think it's very good. I've had fun with it.
All right. Old Zombicide Black Plague sticks around.
All right. Next up in our final between aliens and robots, we have Nemesis number 1 versus 10 Burn Cycle.
Again, a quintessential matchup. I'm glad that we have one of each combatant here because I think that's deservingly so, that they're the top of their game. They actually play as, again, we would think these creatures or aliens would play out. I'm gonna go with Burn Cycle. I think it's more of an accessible game that really does depict more of the robot action, but again, both like top-notch, top tier coin flip kind of situation here.
I'm 100% with you. I'm so glad you said that. I didn't want to have to argue on this one. It's such an interesting take on this. And I'm not even really a fan of Chip Theory's games, but this one in particular just really sticks with me as like an interesting take on this type of thing. Like a lot of robot games go in a certain direction, right? And this one is just unique. It's got like almost an anime type of look and feel to it aesthetically, but it's not anime, right? It's got it's still taking itself a little more seriously, but not so much as to be, you know, silly.
And it's,
so, I love it.
And it's a different, certainly a different style than Nemesis, which is all the miniatures. And, but Ship Theory games, like, I think production wise can stand up to that. And I don't, I don't think anyone else really can say that. If it was anyone other than Ship Theory games, I don't think they could say that they stood up to Nemesis' amazing production.
Right.
So Burn Cycle in the upset moves on to the next round.
All right. Number 12, and we finish off Knights versus Samurai here. Shadows over Camelot versus number 15, Sekigahara. So we still kind of have a more fantastical approach versus a more grounded historical approach. Mm-hmm. But I think in this case, they're much more even in terms of how they represent their theme.
Sure.
I feel comfortable saying both of these do a very good job of what they're doing.
Yes.
In that regard. And they're both also very good games. So this is a very tough decision. I'm going to bring it down to like which game I'd rather play based on that. I don't think either, and you tell me if you disagree, I don't think either really stands ahead in terms of what it's doing with the theme.
I think if it's Knights, again, I think this is like the earlier matchup that we had with Zombicide Black Plague and Dead of Winter. I think Sekigahara is a better game. And I think you can't argue that. But Shadows of Camelot better depicts the actual theme, which is knights. You get to see the knights. They're not abstracted little blocks.
Sure.
And you actually play weapons and you gain materials, and like they're shown throughout the game. You are a knight playing with other knights, teaming, deceiving, utilizing cards and activities, and the artwork is extraordinary. So if it was about which is the better game, Sekigahara wins, but it is better about the better theme. So Shadows of Camelot certainly wins. And I think I think historically that's why it's stuck. I mean, I think that's why Arthurian legend has stuck around, because it has been the depiction of knights, right? When you think knights, you think Arthurian legend. I don't think you go anywhere else.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm going to go with what you said, because I was on the fence and you sold me.
All right. Shadows of Camelot moves on to the next round.
All right. Last one here. Vikings versus Vikings, because again, cowboys are long gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of any of those cowboy games. And again, it's not like influencing our approach here, but I'm not surprised.
Carson City, man. Carson City.
It never did it for me, man.
If you get the deluxe edition, you get horses and cowboy hats and guns and bullets, and it's fun.
But I don't want to pay $100 for a game that I'm met on.
Yeah, but that's what everyone does these days.
I know.
Matt games are $100.
It's stupid. Why are we doing this to ourselves?
I bet it's those damn podcasters that are the cause of all this.
Yeah, we did not help early on.
They hyped this stuff up and they kept asking for like the better components, and they wanted everything in one box, and we got monkey pawed.
We got so monkey pawed. I have so many monkey paws on my shelf right now. Like all these giant boxes I can't move.
There you go. All right.
We got number 9, Champions of Midgard, versus number 3, 878 Vikings.
I mean, it's 878 Vikings. I mean, it is. It's a clearer, better depiction of Vikings, their invasions, but you get all of the war aspects that are somewhat stereotypical and somewhat tropey, but also true because it's a historical abstraction, more or less, but it's on point. It's got the theme, which is the important part here, but it also is a better game. Yeah. Like hands down. And again, I know a lot of people love Champions of Midgard. I love Champions of Midgard. I played a ton of it. I would really recommend checking out 878 Vikings. Don't be afraid. It's not that complicated of a game. It's probably their most accessible war game like this. Wouldn't you say, Anthony?
Yeah, just in general, any of those Academy games, war games, are very accessible. This one is even more so because it's short.
Yes.
It's like 90 minutes.
And it's one
the map is relatively small.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, one defender, one attacker. There's not a lot of like question about what to do or how to do it. So it's great. There's deck building to it. I mean, it's just excellent.
Yep. You've got historical characters too represented on the cards.
Yes.
So it's not even abstracted to the level of like a Blood Rage. It's just like, here are the people.
Yes. Real people
who are in these civilizations who defended against and fought with the Vikings. And here's, now you're going to go attack each other.
Yeah. Academy Games is just amazing when it comes to this, like hands down.
Yeah.
All right. 878 Vikings moves on to the next round.
All right. So, for the record, we have gotten rid of cats. We have gotten rid of aliens. We've gotten rid of samurai, and we've gotten rid of cowboys.
Wow.
So we're down to those. We have four left.
Check your tickets.
It's a zombie game.
Check your tickets, it's people.
check them carefully. Zombies, robots, knights, or Vikings.
Okay.
So matchup number one here, Zombicide Black Plague versus Burn Cycle. Right? It's a weird one.
That's a weird one.
How do you pick a... I don't know.
That's quite painful. I mean, it's supposed to be.
Honestly,
it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We got to talk it out because I have no idea.
Oof.
One of us needs an opinion to convince the other of that opinion. Let's
do it. Again, all right, let's just take it back to the basics, right? Both of these...
Right. Theme.
Yeah. Both of these are... I mean, they need to be... I mean, I guess robots a little bit less, but like thematic... they're thematically imagined, right? Like it's not like, hey, it's cowboys. Is that thematic? That's knights. Is it thematic? Like both of these are... I mean, the zombie things do not exist, at least not that I know of, God willing. The robots kind of are here, so it is a little more plausible, right? Sci-fi versus fantasy. So, thematically?
Yeah.
I mean, sci-fi versus fantasy is always the big, is always the challenge, right? Which one do you like more, right? Like, which one is... does feel, I mean, sci-fi obviously feels a little more true because there is a little bit of techno babble in there that is kind of somewhat possibly correct. And fantasy is just fantasy. Fantasy is like its own thing. But
right.
Theme wise, Zombicide Black Plague. I'm going to go with Zombicide Black Plague because I think, when I think theme at the tabletop, like I think theme wise, they both do perfect. But I think on the tabletop, when I think zombies, I think hordes. And I think even though Chip Theory Games did a great job, I think hordes here. It doesn't have that.
Right.
It doesn't have big mechs.
You got the chips.
Yeah.
It's chips. Yeah. Because it's Chip Theory. So yep. That's kind of the direction I was going. Like, I'm just looking at pictures of the different games because it's what helps me out here. And there's a reason we all keep buying these big boxes of plastic. It's toy-like. It looks like the thing you're playing, and that's why we like them so much. And I think in this case, Zombicide gets the edge because of that, because it uses it so well within its theme, right?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You've got the hordes of zombies. They're represented by these things. It is overwhelming to physically look at them on the map, moving in on your team of survivors. Burn Cycle, it's more of a puzzle, right? And that fits the theme really well because we're talking about logic and programming and robots. But like visibly, if you just glanced at this on the table, you wouldn't necessarily know what the theme was. You'd have to ask.
Yeah.
Zombicide, it's very clear what you're doing.
I think Burn Cycle's, again, I think these things come down. Burn Cycle's a better game, but yeah. Zombicide Black Plague is better thematically.
Yeah, I could take that.
Yeah.
Zombicide
Black Plague moves on to the final round.
All right. Shadows Over Camelot versus 878 Vikings. This one's easy for me. The other one was very hard. This one's easy. Just for everything we already said, like Shadows Over Camelot's fantastic. You have the individual knights, like you said, really represents the theme well. You get to play and you get to engage with it and be part of that. 878 Vikings is the perfect combination of this historical representation of a space and time in which that culture existed and engaged with other cultures. And it's extremely fun. And you get the visual representation of those elements on the map. Right, because you get the characters, you get the plastic, you get it all there, and it's accessible and quick. So it's not long and drawn out and abstracted like Sekigahara. It is just, it is everything you want it to be about the Viking invasion of the British Isles. So for me, it's 878 Vikings.
So even though with the base game, you have the cubes on the map, you do get some of the standees with 878 Vikings. You do feel that that's more thematically significant than Shadows of over Camelot?
I mean, I have the Kickstarter, so I guess I have more miniatures.
Okay.
I don't know.
makes sense.
No, so no. You certainly can play this game like without the cubes, without like there's little dudes everywhere.
Sure.
But even with, yeah, I don't know. It really just, it feels like I'm part of that situation. It's the people are on the cards. You can look them up. It's all right there. It's very accessible. It's not like this long drawn out thing. It does something I think a lot of war games struggle to do, which is be accessible and interesting and yet remain relevant to their theme. Shadows over Camelot doesn't have to do any of that because it's building on a mythos that we're all comfortable and familiar with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, you in the base game, at least, the production for 878 Vikings is good. I think Shadows of Camelot is better because you do have the miniatures there. You do have the artwork for the individual knights. You are playing the cards. I mean, it does feel appropriate. So, again, I would say Shadows over Camelot. I mean, 878 Vikings is a better game. I can't deny that. So, yeah, that's rough.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess for me, the type, I can go with that. I guess the tiebreaker would be which is a better game. Cause I think Shadows of Camelot is super thematic as far as its presentation and thematic gameplay, but which is a better game? It's A7A Vikings, Invasions of England. Moves on
right
to the final round.
Final round. All right. So we have two invading hordes, Zombicide Black Plague versus 878 Vikings.
I didn't think it would come down to these two. Did you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you'd asked which themes, maybe I would have thought Vikings versus zombies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we ignore cats, which like you, I thought would do better. So what do we think? What do we think here?
I think the winner is Boop. I'm just throwing that out.
Boop!
There. Boop comes
yeah,
in.
Yeah, mic drop it. We're out of here.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Both do really well artistically. The art, the graphic design is great. The miniatures on both, as you said, you have the kind of piece, the upgrade. Can't ignore the fact that Zombicide Black Plague is all expansion miniatures, so it kind of fits as far as that's concerned. I think both of them do a great job of, like you said, the hordes are coming in, right?
Right.
And they're destroying the lands, and you are just putting up whatever kind of defense you can to hold them back. And the gameplay is both good. I mean, I think again, it runs into that situation where how do you feel? You know, does it feel like zombies? Does it feel like Vikings? A7A Vikings, again, it's going to be one of those tiebreakers. I think is a better game. If it was Shadows over Camelot versus Zombicide, that's probably a different story, maybe. But 878 Vikings, I think, is a better game, and that's going to be the tiebreaker. But when I play 878 Vikings, I feel like, and of course, I can lose that game. The hordes can overrun me. I can lose and lose badly and lose countrymen and just fall back, see my cities and towns burn. Zombicide, even though there is a plague, I feel like a superhero in that game.
Yeah.
I don't, sure. Like, again, there's a lot of depiction of zombies, fast, slow, demonic, virus, whatever you want to say, but like, I never feel when I played Zombicide that like, I'm at a disadvantage. I feel like it's shooting practice, to be honest. I mean, there's a horde, but I never feel like I'm being overrun in a real kind of way.
That's hard because it does get harder.
It does.
Like if you play enough of it, like you get to like the 10th scenario and the game gets legitimately difficult. But at the same time, and the other interesting wrinkle here is 878 Vikings, you can play either side and it's a very different experience based on what side you play. You can be defending or you could be the attacker, and defenders have far fewer resources but they have the advantage of defense. In Zombicide Black Plague, you are the survivor as you're trying to kill zombies. I don't think they introduce like a way to be the zombies to flip that around until you get to, like, the Marvel zombies, mm-hmm. where you could flip back and forth between being the heroes or being the zombie heroes.
Sure.
Trying to take out the regular heroes.
Yes.
So it's, I don't know. For me, I feel like thematically
it's boop. Thematically, it's boop.
It's boop. I'm out. I quit. It's cats. Cats win. I think I'll go with you. I lean a little towards Black Plague, but at the same time, I don't feel the theme quite as strongly, except within like 878 Vikings. Like, I really do feel like I'm being a part of that experience. And I know there's a lot of war games out there, and people are like, oh no, it's like all those, but like this one in particular really captures that in a really interesting way.
All right. Well, in the end, there could be only one. And surprise of all surprises, it's the Vikings who come out on top.
Taking out all those cats and zombies.
Well, thank you all for joining us. Thank you all for participating as part of the March Madness bracket. Hopefully you had a lot of fun like we did. I did not think it was going to be Vikings, honestly. I was like, that's not going to be Vikings. It's not going to be Vikings. But it turns out it's Vikings. So great time was had by all. Anthony, was there a person who had the foresight to know the future of the most popular IP of all time, in which every game going forward will have to be that thing?
Well, I don't actually know, based on their bracket, if they got exactly right what our end theme was, but I know they got the most points.
Oh, there overall. You go.
Yeah, that's how we measure this. Points. It's we're gamers,
or,
right?
Or buckets. They have to show up at the BGA headquarters and you know, drain a couple of threes from midcourt.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah.
So yeah, Matt is our winner. Congratulations, Matt. I'm gonna reach out to you via email with the list of potential prizes for you to pick from. Thank you to everybody who participated, everybody who submitted. This was very, very close. We actually had two different people who had the same score at the end, and so it came down to random selection. Matt, you are our winner this year. So, yeah, it was awesome. Thank you, everybody who participated. I know we had a little bit of a hiccup with the systems, but everybody persevered and got through and got their picks in. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
All right, until next time, this is Chris.
Hey, this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all. I see you at the table. Thank you, everyone.
Bye. See ya.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.